This is Charlene Ball recording an interview with Eleanor Smith and Lorraine Fontana about the Atlanta Lesbian Feminist Alliance from the years 1972 to 1994. And I'd like to start.
Today's date
is April the 2nd, 2013. And you've already been started talking about your early memories of Alpha. I've got it. I'd like to ask you if you would like to tell, do you think of yourself as a Southerner, and where did you grow up in the South?
No, I don't think of myself as a Southerner in a way, because I did not grow up in the South. I grew up in the Midwest. I lived at Koinonia Farm down in South Georgia in 1973 and 4. Then I went away and then I moved back here about a year later. Must have been about 75. So I've been here ever since.
When did you first join? What about you, Lorraine?
Well, I'm a Southerner now. This is where I live, and I've lived probably more years here altogether in my life than anywhere else. But I grew up in New York City, and I came down here after college. So since 68 till now, except for 5 years, I was back in New York, and a few years I was out in L.A.
I was really impressed, Lorraine, with what you wrote about how people ignored Southern lesbian feminist contributions and how you were basically ignored when you went to a conference in the North, in which only two people came to a workshop. I'm going to cut that off.
So now or then?
It just depends how everyone yeah. answers.
They're asking you now.
Are you a Southerner now, and were you then? And sit close so you'll be able to pick you up.
Well, I'm afraid I probably am now. I mean, really, I've never lived north of the Mason-Dixon line, so I probably don't have too much of a way to wiggle out of it, but I don't really want to be a Southerner.
But what we...
Why? I'm going to ask
why.
Go ahead.
Why not? I mean, what do you mean why? You know why.
Why would you not want to be a Southerner? I want to hear
it. Because it's the most backward freaking part of the whole goddamn country. That's why.
Ooh.
I'm over it. I hate them all. I hate every damn one of them.
That sounds like those people didn't come
yes,
to your panel.
Yes, to me it's a non-Southern way of looking at the South, as everybody here is backwards. It's generally a backward part of the country. We don't have much to say about anything. We're not smart enough to have a theoretical idea in our heads. I think that's generally how. I mean, I know that. I come from New York.
When you were in Alpha, did you run into that with people coming from out of town and joining Alpha? Did they?
Well, that's like me. I mean, anyone that sounds like me, I mean, Southerners here probably didn't trust a whole lot because of how, and also the style was so different. People, didn't particularly like my style because it was such a different kind of way of relating to people and being obnoxious, So.
No.
Yeah, okay. Really.
Okay.
But the example that you were referring to, this is a good example. Mm-hmm. When Vicky Gabrina, Sally Gabb, and I were all three founding mothers, as we call ourselves, of Alpha, along with a bunch of other women. We went to the Clags, SUNY Clags, Dykes in the 70s, America, with a KKK, America, Lesbians in the 70s. And it was great. We thought, oh, wow, it's a great conference, so we wanted to go. And we put in a submission for doing a workshop, and it was going to be about... In fact, Sarah Lynn was going to go at one point, and she couldn't, so she helped write the little blurb about the workshop.
When was the conference exactly?
It was a few years ago. Now I'd have to look up the date. I'd have to get the date.
It wasn't in the 70s. It was a retrospective.
No, it was a few years ago. Yeah, it was about, looking back. Older women and young women looking at, what about those lesbian feminists and dykes back in the 70s?
Yeah.
But our workshop was... Sarah Lynn named it. I think I had a little problem with the name because it was supposed to be a little sarcastic or something, but it didn't really seem like it. It said, Lesbians in the 70s and the city too busy to hate. You know, anyway, but it's clear it was about Atlantis. So it was subtitled something about Atlanta, lesbian feminism. And this was a huge conference with, you know, many hundreds of women. And we had two people other than ourselves, two people that showed up to the to our workshop. And I think it's a lot because, you know, Southern Lesbians, Alpha. Not that people knew about us or had any idea, but there were much more interesting things to go to. There were lots of things happening every hour, you know. So yeah, it felt it hurt, but it didn't surprise me after as I thought about it. I said, typical, like, what, you know, who wants to hear about women who think Atlanta is a city too busy to hate racist assholes? You know, it's probably the thought pattern that went on. You know.
Well, getting back to Alpha, Chris, you just joined us. What brought you to Alpha and when?
1976, Elizabeth Knowlton. That would be the answer.
Okay.
Elizabeth brought me to Atlanta.
How did Elizabeth bring you to Atlanta?
Well, she lived down here, and she owed me a favor, a big favor. But anyway, you know, Elizabeth had brought me out in North Carolina, and then she had moved down here. A year, year and a half later, and I must have had her address. I guess I did, or I got it, but I think I must have had it somehow. And anyway, so I was ready to get out of Durham for a lot of reasons, but mostly because I had been straight in Durham mostly, and I wanted to be gay, and it seemed like Atlanta was going to be a better place to be gay than to be straight, or for me, at least, and so I wrote Elizabeth, and I can't remember exactly how I phrased it, but I'm pretty sure I said, I'm moving to Atlanta, can I stay with you? And I did, for a few days. And then, of course, Elizabeth immediately found me a place. Actually, the first place I lived was...
Go grab the...
The first place I... Was that the first place... Well, anyway, Elizabeth soon, with all her many connections, the first thing I did was I sublet a little apartment from Joanne, what was her last name? The child care person. You know who I mean. Ooh. Dark hair, frizzy.
Oh, yeah.
Rainey, from Joanne Rainey. Yeah. And I sublet her apartment. I don't know where she was off to. And then in September... I moved into a basement apartment that Sarah Lynn and Cynthia had in the house they rented. And I lived there for maybe a year or a little less.
So the founding mothers of Alpha were you, Sally Gabb, and Vicky Garino.
You want to list names now? Wow.
Well, was it a
I'm large sorry. Yeah. This is the kind of stuff that doesn't come in my memory very well. I have to have...
I thought Mickey was one of the founding mothers.
No.
She came later?
No. Yes. Founding mothers included people that were women that were in gay liberation, women that were, I don't know if any women were in women's liberation here, but they were women who had been in other social justice movements. There were a bunch of the women who went on to Second Venceremos Brigade. Mm-hmm. Okay. Alice, and I forget her last
Alice
name. Not Alice Teeter, another Alice. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of writing down names that I can't remember, I will give you a list.
That's okay. Yeah. I just, I guess the idea I wanted is it was a group of women larger than two or three.
Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Okay, great. Were you all involved in women's liberation, or what other kinds of things were you involved with that led you to Alpha?
Well, I was just going to say that I came down, I didn't mention when I came down, I think it was 74. Mm-hmm. And I was in Durham also, but I hadn't met up with lesbians really, and I wrote to Alpha. I had heard of it, and guess who answered my letter? Lorraine Fontana. She answered in a nice long handwritten letter, which I wish I still had, and it was very welcoming. And so I came down already knowing about Alpha, and I joined it.
Back then, we got letters. It wasn't email. Mm-hmm. Was, they didn't know our phone numbers. Mm-hmm. Together, you know, so mm-hmm. yeah, we got letters.
So you were you in disability activist rights
no,
then?
No, I wasn't yet, by a long shot.
But you were, you did go immediately to Koinonia, or was that before?
Koinonia was before that.
Okay.
I was involved on arrival immediately with Alpha, but I also went down and helped the Georgia ERA efforts, which
oh,
several
yeah?
of us
See,
did.
I didn't know that.
I would stuff envelopes and lick envelopes, not a lot. Several times.
Yeah, because that was over. In 76, by the time I got here, that was over.
I think I came down in 74 or 75. I wish I remembered.
When was that march with Betty Friedan and Kate Millett and all those?
That must have been earlier.
Because I was there.
Okay, you know the way to find out? I mean, seriously, to find out date, just to look. Now, unless it's earlier than the first Alpha newsletter. But if it's in later 74 on, that's how you find the dates for stuff, unless you have another time. It was Alpha timeline, too, remember?
Okay.
Remember that I made up for the anniversary and for the birthdays, and that might have a lot of stuff in it, too. But I'm not going to pull, I can't pull up dates.
So did you have a job, or you got a job after you got down here, Eleanor?
After I got down.
Uh-huh.
And you were an ESL teacher at that time?
My first job was with food stamps.
Ah. Oh, yeah? Like Sarah Lynn, huh?
I guess. And when I came down, I had really exceeded my ability to cope. Coming down, knowing almost no one. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of going nuts. And I found Karuna.
Mm-hmm.
Very early on. They were just starting. And they were written up, I think, in Creative Loafing. And I went to Karuna to get some psychological help in coping.
How did you find a place to live?
I had that just before I moved down.
Say what that you found that first.
Well, Joanne Abel helped me find it. She was driving around and saw it because there are almost no accessible places. Mm-hmm.
Say what Karuna is for people listening to the tape.
Karuna is Karuna Counseling for Women and Their Friends. They were brand new. They had just started. And I read about them, and I thought, oh, I need this.
Mm-hmm. So you became one of the counselors there, right?
Later, much later, yes. 7 years later.
One of the things I remember about Karuna was that they did not require you to have degrees in counseling. And that, for me, was, I think, a mixed blessing. But because I think some of my therapists got in over their head. But anyhow. But how did that affect you?
What, finding Karuna?
No, just the general, the alternative way it had of its approach.
Well, I was glad. Our first group, frankly, was not that good. They didn't know how to lead groups. But I was so glad to have found them, and they learned a lot later. Mm-hmm. It really, you know, it was kind of very, very helpful.
So who was there besides Jerry and Susan?
Well, there was a woman, a straight woman, who was leading a group with Susan, and that's what I joined, and I can't remember her name. Mm-hmm. She stayed there a good while. She was
Phyllis? Was that Phyllis?
No, yeah. Phyllis came a little later, I think.
Uh-huh. Was it Doris?
Doris.
Doris, right.
Yes, ma'am. Very good.
She was my therapist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that was a positive experience for you for the most part.
Yes.
In Karuna.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask you all a little bit about activism and what you considered to be activism.
Did you want us all to answer the questions you're asking? I don't know.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I just want to know, because you're going on.
I wanted to go in a kind of flowing way, but okay. If you'd like to go back and answer
a
question.
No, I'm just asking you how you want to do it.
Okay. Well, I guess I would like to jump, because this is really central, I think, to what I want to do, is what do you all consider to be activism?
Anything and everything.
Okay.
Any action you take.
Then I would somewhat disagree. So my view would be Chris, you answer while I think.
That's not fair.
Well, I'm kind of Lorraine, anything and everything. But I think for us, the kinds of activism we've had to do our whole lives have really been about kind of turning people's worldviews upside down. Mm-hmm. And so that's been part of why it's been anything and everything. Mm-hmm. Because everything we did was a challenge to what women were supposed to do. And we weren't supposed to be happy doing what we were doing. I mean, you know, we weren't supposed to be happy being unmarried and in flannel shirts, you know. I mean, we were supposed to be doing other things. So, you know, I think that's a very different view of, and of necessity it's a different view. And it's sort of from, like, just politics, like, okay, I want to change this policy about X, or I want to get government funds for Y, you know, that our worldview changing led to those things, but we had to challenge that worldview as women, and then that very naturally led into challenging the worldview of what it is to be gay or lesbian or
whatever. Yeah, I more or less agree with Chris, except that, you know, going out to dinner and eating tacos is not activism. So at some point...
But you know what? It almost was. Because when we went out to dinner with a bunch of women in flannel shirts...
There you go.
They knew we were not the right kind of women.
I didn't mean anything and everything you did in your life. It was like, if it was, the intent of it was,
right,
in relation to the whatever issue, you know, you were dealing with. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what I mean, too.
Okay.
But I mean... There were a lot of people who were women who were going to bars, and even that you might think of as activism. But I don't think you can, maybe even you want to go this far. A woman sitting in her house wishing she was a lesbian.
Well,
I don't know. Well,
come on.
No,
there's nothing wishing about it.
Question. So I would buy what Chris said. What was activism in the 70s would not be activism now.
Possibly, yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Depending on where you live.
Because people are more used to seeing lesbians, or it's not as radical to see a lesbian?
Yes, because some of the early work done created... there's something about activism that would kind of need to be a little bit on the edge, I think, before I would call it activism. But it could be eating out in your flannel shirts.
Well, here's the thing. Maybe what it's about, because this is what comes to my head, is whatever action you take that is the raising of somebody's consciousness or the change in consciousness.
Right.
I mean, that could be anything from talking to your cousin, you know, about who you are and what it is like to be, to changing, making legislation happen in Congress. I mean, you know.
Right. Or it could be going out to eat in your flannel shirts if it's 1975 or 6 or 7 and acting like dykes.
I was just, can I just say this, because I was just reading the story, again, one of the newsletters I was looked up, and it was during the Great Southeast Lesbian Conference in 75, and some women had come from out of town. I forget their names now. There were four women had gone to eat somewhere, and I think it might have been at Plaza, over the Plaza Drug, near the Plaza Drugstore at, what's the diner that's still there?
The Majestic.
I think it might have been, that it doesn't mention that in the article. But there was a story about, remember, they were arrested. They had been charged something incorrectly. And when they went up and they were, you can imagine who they looked like and what they were dressed like. When they went up and complained about it and insisted that they didn't want to pay for that, they had some real angry responses from people. And then one of the women said something like, well, I ain't going to fucking eat in this place anymore. And then a policeman that was sitting nearby got up because of the cursing and started to be an argument. And ended up arresting them because they wouldn't stop arguing and settle down. And he charged them with disrupting and this and that and the other. And they were dropped. But they all got taken in.
Wow.
And had bail, you know, and all this stuff. Yeah, and they felt it was because of who they were.
Oh,
and,
of course, you know, it was. Right. If a man had said that wouldn't have occurred. Well, you know, speaking of that conference, which I guess was 75, I remember organizing for that and working pretty hard on it. And one of the huge controversies that almost broke it up early on, or at least almost made Alpha pull out, was whether there would be separatist workshops. And it was a huge brouhaha. And the Alpha women were by and large insisting there would be lesbian-only workshops. And the men were pissing and moaning along with some
women. No, that was just the lesbian conference.
You're talking about two different things. We're not talking about the Great Southeast Lesbian Conference.
Yes, I am. I'm talking about the Great Southeast.
Wasn't there a gay...
Well, there weren't any men at the Great Southeast
Lesbian Conference. No, I'm talking about an early conference.
Yeah, you're talking about the first Southeast Gay Conference.
There you go.
Yeah.
When was that?
I went to that.
That was much later.
Okay.
I believe
it wasn't. Actually, it wasn't because I was working for the Great Speckled Bird at the time, so it might have been earlier. It might have actually been earlier than 75.
I think it was earlier.
It was earlier. That national conference was one of the biggest.
The national lesbian conference was much later. Yes.
The battles were much different.
Yeah, this was a gay.
So you were involved in the Southeast Gay Conference.
Yes. And you were too, I think. Maybe not.
I was involved with maybe covering it, but I don't remember being involved in. I don't remember.
Well, we were helping organize it, and I remember that we were getting in these big fights with the men. We were almost ready to withdraw, and they were almost ready to withdraw. And we met at Susan Barrett's house over there, and there must have been 25, 30 men and women in the room. We never hung out with men. Boy, were we mad at them for saying that, no, that would be divisive to have women-only workshops. I think we prevailed, and I think there were lesbian workshops.
Well, I remember, because if it was where Elizabeth and I gave a panel thing on lesbian history, or lesbians in history at that. And I remember a man came in, and Elizabeth said sarcastically, "We're so glad that men are so interested in women's issues."
Okay, what year did you get to?
I don't remember the year.
You don't remember the year you got to Atlanta?
Oh, when I got to Atlanta, I only came to live permanently in 77.
Okay, so this is much later.
But I was coming over a lot earlier to visit my partner who lived here. So I was over here a lot.
Okay, but that first gay conference was real early in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you're thinking of a different one. I think there was a gay conference, then there was a Southeast Lesbian Conference, and then later, maybe even in the early 80s.
There were other gay conferences. It wasn't just one Southeast Gay Conference.
Well, we can look up when
there
were series.
There
were two big lesbian conferences.
Okay.
There were.
Well, two national lesbian conferences? It was one national.
No, there was the Great Southeast one.
But that's just a regional thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then there was
the national one.
The national one.
Okay. Okay, so we can look up conferences.
lots of things were actually going on.
Yeah, so we know what activism is. What did Alpha mean to you? Okay. A big global question. When you came to Alpha, what were you looking for? Did you find
it? I didn't come to Alpha, so...
I'll tell more about why I came here
after college, and I came here for something totally different, which is I was in Vista.
Well, were you already a lesbian then?
I wasn't out. I didn't even consider myself a lesbian. And I loved Atlanta, so after finishing... I'd re-upped for a second year, but then didn't finish that because of other personal stuff that was going on. So I went back to New York, but I'd applied to graduate schools and included Emory in case I wanted to come back to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And then I decided I did because I love Atlanta. So I came back as a graduate student, right? Mm-hmm. And that's during the period I was in graduate schools when I came out. I lived with a house of women, not that they were coming out, but I was my background was in leftist politics and anti-racist stuff. So I connected with, first of all, when I was in Vista, we formed a citywide food cooperative, and part of that was still functioning. So when I came back, I got involved in the little Five Points food co-op buying club. This is before Sevenanda started. And through that and through some anti-imperialist stuff, and, you know, there was the women who were in the Venture Women's Brigade who had been in SDS, who had been in the civil rights movement, they did a lot of other political stuff. These are the women that came together and started talking. And some tried to go into Gay Liberation Front, and I never really went to meetings, but I went to some of their events. and found the same sexism as they had in SDS and the left. And so it was women who wanted to kind of get away from the sexism and say, we got to organize ourselves, we have to get together ourselves. And so a lot of those women, believe it or not, even though Alpha didn't start as a socialist or anything, they were, those of us that were left at the time DAR2 started, that's why we formed DAR2, because we really were, had a class as well as a race and sex analysis. So the people who were leftists decided to talk about socialism again.
That reminds me of, can I interrupt with a question? You know, they always say Stonewall started the gay liberation movement, but to me, that ignores that women started coming out as lesbians. And when I came to Alpha, I had never heard of Stonewall, and I hadn't heard of that uprising for years. So it's my impression, and I'm asking you guys, and you three really, is your impression similar to mine in that the Stonewall uprising had virtually little, if anything, to do with the lesbian movement in Atlanta?
Oh, in Atlanta? Well, this is how I would put it. The Stonewall uprising and what came out of that, gay liberation fronts, the Gay Activist Alliance, this is in New York based and then other parts of the country, that was the early gay movement as we knew it, right? And women who started coming out, that's what they related to, what was there.
I see.
And in New York and in Atlanta, not far behind, it wasn't very long after New York, the lesbians and various organizations started forming lesbian feminist alliances or groups because of the same kind of experiences working with men.
So indirectly, Stonewall did influence the...
Yeah, because the gay movement existed as men and women at first.
That's good to know.
But didn't the Gay Liberation Front in New York actually precede Stonewall?
Precede Stonewall?
Precede. No.
Are you sure?
No. Yeah, pretty sure.
See, my impression was that lesbian feminism was going on culturally, which is mainly what I was into, before Stonewall.
I don't know. Culturally, I don't know what you mean. Do you mean women got together and did stuff together?
No, Daughters of Belitis, for example.
Oh, yeah, but that isn't lesbian feminist.
Well, it was in a way, but it was earlier. It was another generation.
Yeah, in other words, something identified as lesbian feminist didn't come before Stonewall.
Well, for me, lesbian feminism started when I went to college, went to graduate school, and met Julia Stanley. She was teaching linguistics, and she was radical, and that was the first time I heard the term lesbian feminist, I think, and that was early 70s, before Stonewall.
Stonewall was in the 69, remember?
Okay, you're right, but it really maybe it had influenced her, but it hadn't really impacted me. She is what impacted me.
Yeah, I know what you're saying with Eleanor said, which is Stonewall, it's like, that's not... wasn't relevant. Was relevant was what they,
what the women were doing.
And other people had different experiences who had been through either kind of trying to relate to Gay Liberation Front and Gay Liberation Front got the name from National Liberation. I mean, it was all about leftist politics, all that stuff that was happening. Mm-hmm. So the women that I'm talking about and me and other people, that's the framework we were operating in. It's kind of like connecting with, there's the food co-op here, which is about economic stuff, and there's racism, anti-racism over here, which is about the civil rights movement, and going to Black Panthers, and all this stuff was going on at the same time. Cuba, people went to Cuba because it was the socialist revolution, and so it was one part of that. So that's, you might have come from the, coming in from a different angle, like the education setting, learning about stuff through the education setting, which is not at all where I didn't, and when I was in college, it was nothing like that I involved in anti-racist stuff, but not anything about gay or lesbian or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Feminism, even. Mm-hmm. It was only when I came down here that I really connected that stuff with the other stuff that I already... So different people, it's different things, obviously, different people.
But it's still interesting historically, because you would say, here's how it happened, even though it's too simplistic. Leftist politics, Gay Liberation Front, lesbian rebellion.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's how I see
that
it.
That seems accurate to me. I will say, though, I recently realized, or I mean in the last few years, I realized I was actually in New York City the summer Stonewall happened. Because I had this job as a mother's helper, basically as a nanny sort of person. And I was living on the Upper West Side that summer for like six or 7 weeks. And I was mostly there because I wanted to escape my family. So, you know, so I had come home from college and I had this connection with a college buddy of mine that lived in New York, and she lives in New Jersey, but that part of New Jersey that's like close to New York. And so I got this job as a mother's helper, and on my day off, I used to go down to the village. And I remember getting very radical newspapers while
I was
there.
And you were still straight at that time.
Well, yeah, straight as I ever was.
Village Voice?
You know what? I think they were independently published papers. I could be wrong.
The Village Voice existed at that time.
Yeah, I know it did.
But I think they were... One of them, they might, wasn't there Women's News, or I'm not sure what
probably.
All the dates are on all those.
There was
things.
The Rat.
You know, that might have been what it was, but I would get them. I swear, I didn't understand half of what I read in them. I really didn't know very much about sex. I mean, you know, but there was definitely a lot of, you know, there were definitely some intense feminist writings.
You made up for lost time.
I tried. And even though I don't even remember, I mean, I don't think I never read the paper every day there. I might have seen stuff on TV. Stonewall was never on TV. So I don't remember hearing about Stonewall while I was there.
So even if you were there sometimes, you might not have.
Right, exactly. I mean, it was like a small blurb in the New York Times or something, right?
The Village Voice covered it.
Yeah, but I don't remember picking that up. And I don't think I would have felt connected to it even if I had, because it wasn't a place like, I never went to a bar while I was there. I wasn't old enough. Well, I guess I was then. I was over 18. But anyway, but still, there some stuff was already happening. Stonewall kind of crystallized it and got a lot of people involved in it and
it's
made
true.
It more visible and probably energized.
Yes, stuff happening in stuff happened out in California, similar to Stonewall years before Stonewall
in Los Angeles.
I mean, really. About people, you know, deciding not to take it anymore and fighting back in the Compton. I mean, that happened. There was a Compton cafeteria event, which is this big famous event everybody remembers. So, what's his name? Tell us about that.
What's his name?
Oh, my God.
No, not Duncan T.
This is what happens.
Dave.
No. We had the whole series by, who's now at Princeton.
So that guy. The
oh
young guy.
Me. You and me together.
The kid,
oh, my God.
The kid,
anyway,
the son of lesbian parents.
He's a LGBT historian, and there's a lot of stuff happened before. But I'm just saying, you didn't hear the phrase. Now, you're saying yes, but I've never heard the phrase lesbian feminism before.
Alpha.
The stuff happened in New York, and, you know, and that's when we heard about it, and we said, yeah, lesbian feminism. So, but maybe there were people who said they were lesbian feminists who were coming out pretty early.
Well, it was all mixed up because there was the feminists and then there were lesbians that came out in feminism and some of the feminism made them. Yeah, because lesbian feminism formed because the feminists didn't like the lesbians and the gay men didn't like the lesbians. And the lesbians were like, well, we're out of here.
Right. It was all about that same late 60s, early 70s.
Right,
yeah. One of the things I thought was so interesting when I got into the women's studies you know, the women's studies world, started reading about it, is how narrow the early writings in women's studies were. How they said that that feminism, the women's movement began a certain way in New York, and how, and then there were these categories. There were socialist feminists and cultural feminists and radical feminists and mainstream feminists, and I was
like, they were very different from
like
each other.
They were very different. I remember talking to Eleanor about that, and she said, "Yeah, but what? That's not the way it was, because you might have one woman who'd be doing all those different things
absolutely
in one day,
right?
Yeah, and so that was such a and what that did was erase lesbians from anything except." Sex. So the straight feminists that came in and gave us a little class on the history of the women's movement just had one day about lesbian feminists, and that was about sexual issues. You know, about the right to be lesbians. So that was just all very interesting to me.
Oh, I remember something that brought me to Atlanta prior to writing to Lorraine. That was done at Koinonia in, I guess, 74, so I must have moved here in 75, where we got the Great Speckled Bird down there. That's where I first read about Alpha. And the first thing that blew me away was this picture of the Red Dyke Theater. right. of the women yes. performing in the Red Dyke Theater. And I thought, I gotta be.
All right. Yeah.
Mm. Well, when was Red Dyke Theater started? Do you know?
No.
Or does anyone remember? Was it any of you part of it?
No. Yeah, I could get years. You're not going to get any accurate. But unless there, I look at something.
That was the first thing I...
And it already started when I got here in 76.
I wish you had sure. known you were going to oh, like no, ask no, for a day because I would have bought the timeline.
I would
have been able to look it up.
Because that's where I read about it. Uh-huh. And in fact, that's the first thing I... large group of lesbians I ever saw was going to a performance here.
Yeah, I remember that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Woman's Song was also...
That was later.
That was later.
Yeah, Woman's Song Theater was actually earlier. It was Woman's Song Theater existed before Alpha even existed.
Really?
The when you're thinking of the second version of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a reincarnation of Woman's Song Theater. But Woman's Song Theater, and Elaine Kolb was one of the members of it. She was an Alpha founding mother.
Who also founded the organization that led to Concrete Change. She was a woman with a disability.
Well, now, she was only a disability later. Uh-huh. Not when she formed out. She wasn't disabled then. She was disabled because of her that knife stabbing. Yeah, that was later. But when she formed Alpha in an early Alpha, she was one of the women who lived in the first Alpha house with me and Corinne and Sally and a bunch of other women. Yeah, that South House on Mansfield Street.
Wow.
And she was the one that started the first lesbian radio show on WRFG was her show, Lesbian Woman.
No
idea. And she was also a leftist, Vince Ramos Brigade person. What was I saying about her to begin with, though? There was a reason I was saying.
She was a founder of Woman's Song Theater.
She was one of the members of the early Woman's Song Theater, which was a feminist theater group. But she was she might have been the only lesbian and one of two lesbians in the group. The other woman was straight women. Mm. Trying to remember the names. I can't remember that. I'd have to look it up somewhere. But yeah, there were maybe six women in that group. And they performed... Mm-hmm. all over, and when Alpha started, they were still around, the original group, but then it disbanded, and then later, this Woman's Song Theater you're thinking of was a reiteration of that. Jean Allen was in it then, and she wasn't in the first one.
Yeah,
but,
okay. So you were here in 70, 71?
I moved here in 68.
Okay. And then you were in grad school then? In 68?
No, in 68 I was in Vista.
Yeah.
So it was in the beginning of 70 I moved back to New York and then back here a few months later in
grad school.
70.
What were you going to grad school in?
At psychology. The first year was experimental psychology. Then I decided that was too away from reality. So maybe clinical psychology would be more put me into working with people. And then I decided I don't want to be a damn... full-time student, I wanted to do the important stuff, which is to do Alpha work.
Yeah, because you were I think you were already with Xerox by the time I got here.
Ah.
Because I remember there was a group of the Xerox girls.
Yeah, I was the first Alpha, the first dyke in Xerox. And
were you?
Everybody else. Yeah, I was the first one. In fact, when I got in, there was only
always
one other woman who was working at Xerox. And she was on maternity leave at the time.
And were you doing the same kind of... because. You were a repair person. Right?
Yeah.
That was the first thing you did?
Yeah. Technical representative.
Yeah.
And that also just put that in. That's a very common thing that they ever wanted to be non-traditional jobs. If you weren't going to be getting a degree and a professional, then you wanted, what's a non-traditional job? I want to work something that, So that's a lot of jobs I had were about
that. Barbara's claim to fame, that she was one of the first women bike mechanics. Mm-hmm. And she came to Atlanta and started Dancers with Jean James, and there were virtually no women's bike mechanics.
Yeah, yeah.
And she'll probably say this in her little writing thing, but people would come in and say, "May I speak to the owner?" They would think that they were cashiers or something.
No, I remember that kind of stuff. I mean, in fact, give you another example. And this was the earliest example for me. So it was, God, when I first stopped doing graduate school, so I guess it was in 72, I think, but I needed a job, so I went to the state to look up the kind of jobs they had, and I took a test for, what do they call, surveying assistant, people that go out and, they do all this, so, and I got this great grade, like they had to interview me, because I got one of the best grades, whatever kind of test it was, I don't know. So I got called in, and they had the nerve to tell me, and I had no sense then, I had no legal kind of analysis at that point that what wasn't allowed. They said, I think you're really good on this, but we just don't hire women to do this. So that was it. We just didn't hire women. Forget it. So I had also applied to other stuff, and it was like this really trippy thing where you would go and they try to talk you out of stuff. Like I almost got talked out of working for Sears as a refrigeration technician. Mm-hmm. Again, I, you know, did good, and they had, you know, said, you know what this involves, though? You have to sometimes you install ice makers. It was one of the things, installing ice makers, new thing in refrigerators,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that means you have to climb around and to go in the basement sometimes, oh, in the crawl space under a house, and there's like, sometimes it could be snakes, but they really did this kind of thing where, you know, you don't want this job.
Right.
And it's like, oh, it's okay. I'll do it. Okay. So they, by that, they were a little smarter, I think, and they realized maybe we can't just tell them, don't hire women. So.
Yeah, right.
But I was the only woman in that whole training class in the whole, and that's Sears. Everybody in the morning would be there getting their orders and getting their schedule. The only woman. So it was that kind of. Everybody loved that, you know, trying to do that and doing that, getting kind of. But they were good jobs because they were jobs for men, usually were good paying jobs.
Yeah, I remember a lot of women electricians, carpenters, and all that. Yeah. So this document says that Alpha had three emphases: social, political, and educational. Do you all remember it as any differently from that? Or which, and if so, what were you mostly focused on?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think the term political at that time, that didn't mean like electing people to office.
Mm-hmm.
It meant maybe advocating for different laws at the most.
Mm-hmm. It meant marching in the parade. For example.
Yeah. It didn't. We weren't even close enough to consider introducing bills in the state legislature or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
The definition of political was more about just saying, hey, we should have rights. That was pretty political right then.
Right. And protesting, you have it. Yeah. It was, someone put that wrong, and
yeah,
they
I
put
know,
the stuff that
wrong.
Was political under social, but,
yeah,
you know, demonstrating at the Journal Constitution. We got a lot of groups to demonstrate with us because they wouldn't put our name in any kind of, we wanted to run an ad about this is where we meet, and they wouldn't print it because lesbian, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we had demonstrations there, did that kind of stuff, you know.
Very political.
Very.
And political being part of the gay pride marches, you know, and having an open house or having some event during that week was political.
I would say organizing the conferences would be considered.
And having a woman's only space and having an organization was just a political act by itself.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
But in terms of educational, working on the newsletter, and I happen to have a picture.
Ah.
Not a very good one,
because
it's a Xerox. This is the newsletter committee meeting on my porch.
Oh,
right.
You've
now,
seen
I have a copy of that picture, a photo of it.
Ah.
See, it's Chris. And it's Mary Ellen and Karen.
Karen, oh. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth was on it some of the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know who
else. Oh, I think she was always on it.
Yeah, she
was. I was on it sometimes. I don't, early on, I was on the newsletter committee. That's great.
That's
Look
great.
At you. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, she had hoisted herself onto the arm of the wheelchair.
Wow.
Very cute women, all of you.
We didn't think so at the time. But
you did. Yeah. So I've covered pretty much the political. What about what did you focus on in particular? Everything at once, or did each of you have a different focus? Chris, I know, was involved in the women's music aspect, and you've interviewed about that already, haven't you? Didn't Beth interview you?
Mm-hmm.
That was Lucina's music, right?
Mm-hmm.
And was that your main focus when you were in Alpha? Was the music?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, my main focus was just living. Becoming a lesbian.
Yeah.
Finding out what that meant.
Yeah.
What was involved. You know, finding a job took me a really long time to find a job. Unemployment was pretty bad. I think it was 5 or 6. Of course, I wouldn't seem like right now, but... you know, it took me a long time to find any kind of permanent job. I did temp work for a long time.
then you were WRFG too.
Well, that was my job, but it took me a year or so to find that. And then I was also, I guess by that time maybe I was already the Olivia Records rep. So I didn't really think, there was some potential for income with that, but I didn't really think of it as an income sort of potential. It was more of just a work kind of, you know.
And your main focus, Lorraine, was mainly...
It wasn't main, it changed depending on what year it was, what was happening, what was needed. I mean, at first, you know, I was working with the library, creating a library, and then I was on a newsletter committee, and then I would be with the, you know, speakers beer stuff, or whatever I could do in terms of work and whatever... was needed.
Well, how long did the other founding mothers stick with it? Because my remembrance is that you were there and clearly central, and I don't remember the other founding mothers much.
Yeah, the other founding people and the original people, you know, none of them really were a lot of the people moved away. Like Vicky, I had moved to LA in 76, and by the time I got back, I think she was leaving or ready to leave. And Sally had already left, and a lot of the early women that had formed, even before Alpha started, two women's households, collectives, called Upstairs Downstairs. It was on Clifton. And they were the people, like I said, were involved, some of them with Sojourner Truth Press, some of them with you know, various socialist and anti-imperialist organizations, and the food buying club. We used to meet there sometimes to distribute the food in their backyard. And they were some of them were the same women who went on, and they were Alpha founders, to be in Ruby Fruit Jungle and Lavender Coven, which were houses that were formed when Alpha was formed.
And Peachy and Mickey were both in Red Dyke Theater. Because I remember them on the stage in about 75. And Vicky was still an Alpha when I came here.
She, like I said, when I came in 79, if she was still here or she had just left, I'm not sure. But,
oh, 79. Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying, you know.
You were here way before 79.
I wasn't here in 76 or 79. I was in California.
Oh.
You weren't?
Yeah, I was going to law school. That's when I went to People's College of Law.
So you took a leave of absence.
But I remember you. I remember you here, don't I?
No, I mean, I might have, when I came back and visited, maybe. Claudette and I both went to California. And we would come back, like, I guess, to visit a couple of times visited.
But. Okay.
But she was here when she wrote the letter to me in 74 or 5.
Yeah, well, that was before I was here.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out.
Oh. When she moved back? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you came in what year now?
76.
76.
May, I think
it
was May.
And I tell you, a lot of what I did, especially later, tended to be as an Alpha representative to other things. Mm-hmm. So, although I was on a newsletter committee for a while, but I don't remember after coming back from school and that I was trying to, I was still in school here and I was at the bar and all that, and I even went and did some legal work in Savannah. So there was a lot of time when that was where a lot of my time was, going to school and learning the law and all that. But when I did kind of reconnect with Alpha, like I would do things like be the Alpha rep to the National Anti-Klan Network. Or be the Alpha rep National Anti-Klan Network,
okay.
NACN. Now it changed its name to something else. It exists as something else now. Do you know what I'm talking about? I forget that. I have to look that up too. It changed its name. C.T. Vivian was the head of that at the time. Mm-hmm. And things like working with Black and White Men Together, because they had, in California, their chapters there had done anti-racist work, and they brought that work to Atlanta and the Anti-Discrimination Project, and I was the Alpha rep and worked with them on that. So that's the kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Then I would, you know, report to Alpha, and we discuss it, and, you know, try to get other people involved and that kind of work, working with the Police Advisory Committee. this was very early on. What happened now is that there's LGBT folks in what's called in the police advisory committee. They're the go-betweens for the gay community and the police. Mm-hmm. Back then, the police advisory committee were queer folks that met with the police talked about problems that were occurring with the police enforcement and what they were doing and the harassment and
stuff like that. Such as being arrested in a car. Do you remember the year for that? She was just holding hands or kissing a woman.
Who is this again?
Liz Hill.
Ah, no, I don't remember that.
Speaking of police harassment.
And she was arrested.
I don't think she was. Were they holding hands or kissing?
Or just sitting there?
They were. Yeah, I think they were just driving while lesbian. Seriously.
Wow. Or parked.
Pretty much. Lesbian. Yeah.
But anyway, it'd be interesting to ask her about that if you wanted to, because she was one of the people we still know who was arrested. I think she was arrested. She was definitely harassed.
She was arrested. She had to get a lawyer and the whole nine yards. It took a year to get that freaking thing resolved.
That'd be important.
I don't remember that, so maybe it was during that 76, 79.
I think that was 78, maybe.
So I miss a lot of people take things and I go, I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, right.
I remember hearing about it. I remember hearing about it.
Do you?
Yeah.
By the way, the first Alpha House was not accessible. And I would go and kind of wait outside till somebody came along. I remember I arrived at one meeting, and there was nobody coming along. And I literally went over to a window, and I bent over and picked up gravel and threw it against the window screen. Finally somebody
Damn,
noticed.
I wish they'd hurry up and invent cell phones.
But I don't know who did this, but some women at Alpha put on a ramp, big work day. I remember I cut the ribbon.
The McClendon House?
You're talking about the first
McClendon
house?
No, the second house.
No, McClendon, we know that, yeah. That's a ramp
but
there,
McClendon
but the original house.
McClendon didn't have a ramp at first. That's the one that didn't have a ramp.
So is that the one you threw the gravel against?
Well, Mansfield didn't either, so I'm thinking you were talking about the first Alpha House.
No.
First Alpha House was at Mansfield, okay.
Okay, the McClendon House, you threw the gravel against the window. Okay.
It was unusual that they put one on, rather than unusual
exactly.
that there wasn't.
Yeah, it was.
I was very happy with them, and it was a very nice occasion.
So how many women, do you have a sense of how many women were actually members?
1,500?
While you were there, involved in Alpha.
It varied, because I was
with Alpha. But there
wasn't
really a membership.
For a long time.
Right. I mean, it wasn't a matter of being a member or being not.
Yeah, it was a membership.
There was a membership.
There was a membership, definitely. You paid membership fees, and you had,
I don't remember that part.
But it was very cheap, like $5 a year. Yeah.
It was a scale. It was supposed to be a sliding scale from 5 to 50 or whatever, something like that. Mm-hmm. Whatever you could afford.
Yeah, so that's why I think the membership was 50 to 100.
Mm-hmm. It varied a whole lot. I think at one point there probably were more than 100 people who were members on the membership
but
list,
not that
for sure.
Active,
but I don't remember what years that might have been.
Then there were a lot of people who would show up who probably weren't on the membership list.
Yeah. There were some pretty big meetings that crammed into that living room.
Actually, people came to meetings a lot less than they either joined or came to events, you know. So,
Yeah, a lot of people came to the dances in particular, didn't they?
What were some of the first dances?
Fundraisers.
Azalea? Was there something
I remember
before
the Azalea.
Azalea?
I don't know.
I don't remember the first ones either. I don't know. It might have been having a Halloween dance, There were Halloween dances, I know, back then.
There were Thanksgiving dinners in the Alpha House.
Mm. Oh, that's right. They were awesome. Yeah.
Which we called Dicegiving.
First events were concerts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you've been interviewed about the concert about your involvement with the chorus, because I've read your piece.
Oh, the chorus came a little later.
Okay.
Yeah. The chorus came in, I think, 81, because I had been in a chorus out at San Francisco on my field trip out there, and I thought, well, when I came back, Atlanta needs a chorus, and we finally got one going.
So you kind of spearheaded that?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I spearheaded it. We sang off of little mimeograph sheets in the Alpha House with no director. Mm-hmm. And Judy Ailey was one of them, so she's the other co-founder, because okay. she's the one that found the director later mm-hmm. at a party.
Right, and I've talked to them about that.
Yeah, so it's written up. Yeah. That's written up. Yeah. If you don't have it.
I have it. I've read it. Okay. In fact, I was there when, a couple of different interviews about that.
Okay, there. So that's all you can say about
yeah.
that.
Yeah, so, well, I'm not sure. Is there anything you all would like to add to this interview that you think hasn't been covered?
Did you have a particular focus in what you
My focus
write?
Was mainly the different kinds of activism and mm-hmm. involved with Alpha that you three, or should have been four or five, were involved in.
Did you get what you wanted?
Pretty much. What I seem to have come up, I'd like to find out if you all think you've said what you would like to have included in another article about in this chapter.
I think there were very few women of color.
Okay.
There was only one other disabled person I remember that ever showed up, and that was a deaf woman.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I say, since you mentioned the deaf community, there was a whole period of time when there was some effort made at Alpha to have a lot of women learning sign language, ASL,
mm-hmm.
because of Deborah, I think, was the first woman that. Mm-hmm. But then there were a whole lot of women who ended up coming during that period of a year or two when we were really getting into it, because they felt then they could communicate with people, at least basically. And I have bunches of pictures, too, of events
cool.
happening at the
who
house.
Who were deaf? Women who were deaf?
Yeah, deaf community women. There was, you know, they have a gay community themselves, deaf mm-hmm. gay folks.
So I didn't know that there were that many that came to Alpha. That's cool.
But they weren't necessarily Alpha members, but they did, you know, because of that, because of what we were doing with the classes.
But they met there.
Wanting to learn.
That's a
and,
great story.
Yeah. That is.
So, I mean, Alpha was head of the curve in a way, disability-wise, for those two reasons.
Uh-huh.
Even though... Oh, never mind.
Even though there weren't very many
yeah.
Alpha members.
Well, even though the bar was set so low, actually.
yeah.
But still, same way with the Michigan Women's Music Festival, way ahead of the curve. Chris and I.
In fact, my memory may be wrong. You talked to First E folks who were actually members of the E Church or X Church back then.
Mm-hmm.
But my memory is that the reason, one of the main reasons they put a ramp
mm-hmm.
on their church is that we told them we wouldn't hold any more of
yes.
our events there.
I remember.
If that. It wasn't accessible. That's after we put
mm-hmm.
our ramp in and
mm-hmm.
we're all great, we're accessible now. So you can't be accessible, we're not going to hold our events there.
And they needed the money.
That was in the 80s, because when Chorus first started meeting there, there was no ramp.
Mm-hmm.
And the women pulled me up, and it was always scary, because that's a huge flight of stairs.
Yeah, that's
no rail.
I remember reading a newsletter article. I don't still have my old newsletters, but I remember reading a newsletter article in which someone, I think it was Christina Ishtar, was saying, we will not hold our dances at First E unless they build a ramp and make it accessible. And it was built.
And, you know, one of the women who took a big hand in that, I think, was Pam, that very heavy woman.
Yeah, it never would have been built without her.
So
Pam,
scary.
What was her name?
She's deceased. Pam Martin.
Yeah, that's
Martin,
right.
Right. And she was in she founded a Fat...
Fat Dykes.
Fat
yeah.
Dykes, right.
She was an original founder of Fat Dykes.
Right.
I remember the first time that Fat Dykes rode in the parade, we rode in a pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
And after we rode in the pickup truck, I don't know what year it was, we went out and drove around in front of Lane Bryant. Proud! Fat! Proud!
Oh,
we got together at somebody's house and looked at the footage on the news, and this African-American newsreader was reading about the parade and all that stuff. And apparently he had never said the word lesbian before, he hadn't practiced it. And so, saying the word, so it's the funniest piece of footage, I wish we had it, it's something like this. More than 5,000 gays... His mouth almost fell off.
Don't they prepare for these things?
No. That's fine.
It was all so new.
Yeah, it was all so new. Okay, well, I guess that's that will be it. If you all are pleased.